Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining me today. My guest is Lisa Gayton Harper. She is the Director of Latino Services at Alzheimer's Los Angeles. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, Marcia. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, I'm just absolutely delighted, and I'm so glad that the show is starting off precisely as it's supposed to. Before I have you tell us a little bit, really, you can't imagine what a deep sigh of relief that is. Before we go on, I just wanted to mention to everybody that November is National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness and National Caregivers Month. For those of you that may not have known that, I think that's important for you to know. But before we get into the meat of the show, so to speak, I think it's always so important to get to know my guests. So could you please just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm born and raised in California. My parents were both immigrants. My dad was from Chihuahua, Mexico. My mom was from Guadalajara. Mexico, Jalisco, and I was born here in LA and raised here, and I became a single mama at 18, 19 years old, and then I finally, got married in my late 30s, and so I live here in Whittier. I'm local and with my husband and my two dogs.
That's great. I love that. And I know that you are pursuing your doctorate degree, but we'll get to that. But
yes.
What I'd like to know is, what inspired you to pursue a career in social work?
You know, Marcia, I've always liked helping people, I don't think I can share this, but I remember my dad telling me, even when I was little, my mom used to work late nights as a cashier at a hamburger stand, and so we would have to go pick her up at night. So sometimes I would go with him, and he said that even when I was a little kid, I saw a homeless man, on the street. And I said, he needs food. We need to give him food, and I don't know. I was little, four, maybe five. I don't know, and so. Ever since I was little, when he told me that, I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. So he's like, you've always been like this. So my dad is gone. He's been gone for almost 12 years now. But I've always enjoyed helping people, volunteering, so that's always something that just came naturally and just naturally. And then as I got older and I started to see just the need for, I guess you'd say, Spanish speaking community, I just wanted to help. I didn't know how, but I just knew I wanted to help in, social services some way, somehow. And that's really how I got into, social work and learning about that and what can I do as a professional, as a career to help my Spanish-speaking community. And, yeah.
Well, so what continues to motivate you today?
Well, there's still a need for Spanish-speaking professionals. Like you said, I'm studying for my doctorate right now, and unfortunately, only maybe 2%, Spanish-speaking professionals have a doctorate. So the statistics are still low. We still need a lot more Spanish-speaking professionals in the medical field, in the, educational, higher-level field. I want to say, create programs or that are really culturally on point for our Spanish-speaking community.
Yes. That really makes sense to me. Is there an underlying reason or purpose that drives you to pursue your goals and aspirations?
Well, you know, I worked in end-of-life care for a little over 10 years. Yes, and so I saw just a lot, I would say, unnecessary suffering, a lot of lack of information also.
Right.
Yeah, just because, you know, I get there's health literacy, yes, health literacy, and especially the community, but we are not, I'm just going to say, like, when we get the information, we share the information. But that's mm-hmm. the point, is that's the key. I would say the gap is getting the information to the communities that need it the most.
Absolutely. And there's not always a lot of ways to do that. Certainly there's a lot of nonprofits out there that you could be a guest speaker for, you know, but, you know, it's like you say, it's getting that information. Was there a specific experience or moment that deeply influenced why you do what you do?
Yes, yeah, so my dad, you know, like I said, he's been gone now 12 years, it's going to be 13 years, and
okay.
He was diagnosed, so he, you know, he had diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and he was diagnosed with, you know, renal failure. So he was on dialysis, gosh, 9 years, almost 10 years, a long time.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. And I want to say maybe like 2 or 3 years into the dialysis treatment, he was diagnosed with vascular dementia. And I remember, I'm the second oldest, and I speak English, so I had to go with my parents to the mm-hmm. point, you know, because of language barrier. And I remember when the doctor told us that he was diagnosed with vascular dementia, thinking, what the heck is that? And how do we get rid of it, right? Not knowing, mm-hmm. just being so young and not knowing. What exactly that meant. And so my mom and my dad knew less, right?
Sure.
And so I remember that, and I wish I would have known about, like, organizations like Alzheimer's LA back then, because my mom so needed that. She was the main caregiver, mm-hmm. right? And so I just saw a lot, I'll just say gaps in the healthcare system
mm-hmm.
for my dad. Some were great physicians, right? But didn't speak the language, and some were not so great physicians and didn't speak the language. Does that make sense? So
yes.
It made things a little harder, right? And so the whole transition. And so it was just, I know, so this is why I can speak and say I know the disease professionally and personally, as well as mm-hmm. I know end-of-life care, hospice, personally and professionally. Because my dad going on hospice, you know, because of complications, and we mm-hmm. had to decide, well, my mama, but we got, as a family, had to decide, what do we do? Well, there's no more quality mm-hmm. of life there, you know, so the doctors,
mm-hmm.
Excuse me if I get emotional, but
but it makes sense that you would get emotional. That's your dad.
It was a tough time. So I remember.
It was.
I remember just having to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And not because he didn't have any plans. He didn't have any advance directives in place. So my mom.
Oh no.
Yeah. So this is what, you know, I get it. I get what our community goes through because we
mm-hmm.
went through it. And being Catholic, but we the first thing that we knew was to go to the priest. Let's go talk to Father Larry and see what he says because we don't know what to do. Right.
Right.
So
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, these are just things that happened, right? And
mm-hmm.
that I had a chance to experience. And so I know what some of these difficult decisions are, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I think the fact that you're not just sharing the information, you have felt this experience, so you know what you could have needed, what could have helped you, and what now that you've experienced that, how that transitions into how you can help others. And your dad would be so proud of you. I'm sure he would be just so proud of you, as well as the rest of your family. But I think that this is so important. And frankly, you know, we're going to be talking about the Latino community specifically. But mm-hmm. whether you're Latino or not, this disease affects, it knows no borders. And
exactly.
It's a very important, it's important information for everybody to know. And I want to just mention the website for those of you that may be listening as we speak. It's simply alzheimersla.org. And if you don't know how to spell Alzheimer's, I'm going to spell it for you. It's okay. Alzheimers. There's no apostrophe there, just Mersla.org. And you have a fascinating website. Giving Tuesday is November the 28th. It says right underneath your logo, providing free education and support for people living
yes.
with Alzheimer's and other dementias and their caregivers. Come on. And I hope that people will consider making a contribution. But let's talk about your role in this organization and exactly what your responsibilities are now.
Yeah, so fast forward now, right? So education and outreach really, truly as are the core of my responsibility with Alzheimer's Los Angeles. And it really is in a nutshell, is raise awareness about the disease, specifically how it affects Latinos, right, our community, and then inform and educate them on the disease and risk factors and how to lower those risk factors, and then also to connect them to resources. So that, in a nutshell, really is my role and responsibility in this position, and taking this information to those communities that need it the most. You know, so I think we serve, you know, the underserved. You know, and that's
yes,
where I love to be in you know and thrive.
Yeah, I'm sure when you close your eyes at night, you realize, without even knowing who you touched, that you did touch. I'm reading something right now on your website that says every 65 seconds, someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. That's pretty amazing. I think what would be really helpful right now is, I'm a definition person. I'm a literal person, and so for me, it helps me to appreciate and understand the definitions of things. And so I think we should start with some definitions. So let's start with the definition of dementia. What exactly is dementia?
That's a great question, Marcia, because oftentimes this gets so confused, dementia and Alzheimer's, right? They think there's a lot of just a misunderstanding of that. So dementia is, think of it as an umbrella term for loss of memory and other thinking abilities where severe enough to interfere with daily life. So we have dementia, and then under that we have the different types of dementia. So think of dementia as the symptoms, right? That leads us to believe to cause, you know, to let's see what's going on here. And so Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. Vascular dementia is the second most common. Those are the two, the distinctions between the dementia, think of symptoms, and then Alzheimer is the one type of dementia, a disease. Does that make sense?
And is there something called Lewy body or something like that too?
Yes. Lewy body is another form of dementia. So that's the third, I would say that's, you know, if you could list them, because there's different types of dementia. Just like there are different types of cancers, if you're actually liking it, right? Same thing with dementia, types of dementia. So Alzheimer's is the most common, vascular dementia, Lewy bodies, frontotemporal, which is what Bruce Willis was recently diagnosed with, et cetera. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And honestly, we spoke prior to doing this podcast together, and I really appreciated you explaining that so that people understand that the term dementia is the symptom, and then there are types. And is dementia referred to as a disease?
Well, I think that's a misconception. So Alzheimer's is the disease. Does that make sense?
I see. It does now that you say that. So Alzheimer's is a disease. The vascular type is also, those are the 1, 2, and 3s that you mentioned, those are the diseases, correct?
Right. Correct.
I see. Well, that's important to understand that. So Alzheimer's then, as you mentioned, now fits under that umbrella, if so to speak, and I can sort of visualize that with where the Alzheimer's fits into that. So let me ask you, I think I sort of know the answer to this question, but maybe you'd like to say more about it. What motivated you to work in the field of Alzheimer's and dementia care, particularly with the focus on the Latino community? I presume this had everything to do with your dad. Is that right?
Absolutely. My dad. And then just, you know, after experiencing that with my dad just and working in, you know, end-of-life care and hospice, just seeing the lack of, I would say, information, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reoccurring theme of, for Latinos, specifically those who do not speak English, or, you know, understanding the diagnosis, right,
mm-hmm.
Of the disease, whether it's Alzheimer's, vascular, et cetera, and the prognosis, right? So I'm diagnosed with this. Now what? And then, you know, as you know, it's a progressive disease. So it really just takes a long time, but there's a slow decline, but there's a decline, right? And there's different phases, right? And so once we enter the mid to late phase, multiple visits to the ER, and they just, Latino families, you know, just don't understand what does this all this mean? Well, we're in the last phase, and so, but what does that mean, right? And so a lot of, I would say, physicians don't take the time to explain what this last phase means and how it's going to look like and what's going to happen. And unfortunately, what happens is a person dies of complications of the disease, right?
I see.
Really preparing them for that, that's what's missing.
Yes, it must be so scary if you're that, you know. You teared up just speaking about it, and it's been a long time. You don't forget those things. And,
no.
And end-of-life care, you know, that's an occupation that some people actually pursue as their career. And when people, does insurance play any part of any of this? If somebody has to be hospitalized or something like that, or they need somebody to come in and help them, is there a cost?
Well, again, this depends on the type of insurance that the individual has, and if the individual has insurance. You know, that's all, access. I go back to access. A lot of Latinos don't have insurance, right? And if they do have insurance, how can I say this? You know, the quality of care is still missing. Mm-hmm. It's still not there for some groups, for some minority groups, I'll say that.
I see. That's interesting. And I think everybody realizes this. You know, we're talking about the LA affiliate because Alzheimer's is a national organization. So regardless of where you're listening to this in the country, you can certainly look up Alzheimer's where you live to get this kind of information as well, correct?
Right. So we're Alzheimer's Los Angeles. So we service specifically the Los Angeles County area, all of LA County.
All of LA County, I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see some of these unique challenges that you must face and the needs of the Latino community when it comes to the Alzheimer's care and support?
So I go back to access, right, access to information, letting them know what available resources are out there, you know, for them, and that majority of them are free. So I can't tell you how many times I go to a community event Many are still surprised to learn that, one, our organization exists, right? We are Alzheimer's mm-hmm. LA. And, two, mm-hmm. that our services are for free. They're like, what? So I still get yeah. I still get shocked. And so that still lets me know that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, right, in some of these communities to let them know that there is information out there. There's an organization. There's help out here mm-hmm. if you have been diagnosed with the disease or to learn about the disease. But the second part is there's a lot of misconceptions, right? And what I mean by that in the Latino community is, you know, a lot, not just, and I would venture to say not just in our community, but I think as a whole uh-huh. is, there's this misconception that memory loss is a normal part of aging, right? And that,
right.
that's not the case. Not, you know, yes, we all forget our car keys. Yes, we all forget, you know, stuff, right? But I think identifying when it's more serious than that and then going to see the doctor, right?
That
still needs a lot of work. We still need to do a lot of work with that piece right there. What is normal? And normal, I would say, normal with, quotes around it, right? As usual.
Yes, exactly.
Normal aging. And what's not? And then when should I go get checked, right, if it's not?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like anything else where you have a baseline, you know? And
right.
If you regularly see a physician, that might be something that's just going to be part of what you do as an annual exam if you're feeling
exactly.
forgetful. A lot of us, like mm-hmm. you say, you could be in your 30s or you could be in your 70s, and it's like, where did I put my keys? Or I thought
right.
I had my phone with me. Or what day of the week is it? You know, I you know what, I'm certainly not an expert, but I would just put myself into this, and I would say, I think what happens is when our brain is multitasking and you
yeah.
want to do one thing and then something else catches your eye, and then you start doing that. Oh, I meant to feed the cat. Oh, that's right. Okay, now, I was going to go outside and water the plants. Where's my phone? You know what I'm saying? I think
right.
I think that sometimes whether you're a senior or you're a young person, sometimes multitasking can be your worst enemy. And so I say to myself, finish what you started. If it means you need to write yourself a note and put the post-it note on your hand, do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying that sometimes we can complicate matters by not finishing what we've started. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Multitasking is one of the things that really, I don't know how to say this, but contributes to, you know, I say risk factors, if that makes sense. Right?
Okay.
We all do that. I do that.
Yeah.
I do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yes.
One task at a time, it's helpful.
Right. Would you say that the Latino communities is disproportionately affected? How does the disease disproportionately affect the Latinos, and what are some of the factors that contribute into that disparity?
Yeah, so I can give you some statistics. So Latinos are 1.5
yes.
times more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than
wow.
non-Latinos, but are more likely to be diagnosed in the mid to late stages, if diagnosed at all, right?
Mm.
Another startling statistic is caregivers. So more than 1 in 5 Latino caregivers report caring for someone living with Alzheimer's or a related dementia. And then I could get into some perceived discrimination, you know, but by Latinos. So this is a 2021 Alzheimer's disease and fact figures, right? And
okay.
Latinos report 18% believe discrimination is a barrier, 34% experience discrimination, and 28% of caregivers experience discrimination. So this is a report done by Alzheimer's in 2021. And these are startling statistics, right? Because
yes.
It's not like I, you know, working in the community and in this population, you see some things, but then to have facts and figures back up what your belief is, it's I think a little disheartening, you know. But at the same mm-hmm. time, validating that we need to do a lot of work in this area.
Has anybody from your organization been on any of the local news stations talking about this?
Specifically for Latinos? Affecting
yes,
Latinos?
Uh-huh.
I'm not too sure. I just joined the organization about a year ago, last August.
Okay.
So I've been here a little over a year, and then we had the pandemic, right? So I don't know. But I will say that the pandemic was, you know, as awful as it was, what it did do was highlight what we already suspected was going on in the, black and brown communities, right? And access to quality care. This has been going on for a long time, but I really believe that what the pandemic did was highlight really mm-hmm. were underserved.
Yeah. It's kind of like the word cancer, and I'm putting quotes around that word, whether it's breast cancer, prostate cancer, whatever the cancer might be. You really can't talk to anybody that can't say that they know somebody, either a friend or a family member, that has some connection to cancer. And I have a feeling that, you know, dementia and its diseases that's underneath that really do affect a lot of people, and sometimes they don't even really realize it. And that's what you were saying, that, you know, understanding it is number one, having access to the help is number two, and it's so important. And I like I said, your website is really, really interesting. I wanted to ask you if you could explain the importance of early detection and diagnosis of Alzheimer's in the community and what barriers might exist in that regard.
Yeah, so there's a lot of research out there that, you know, that identifies that we need more Latinos to participate in these research studies so that we can learn how this disease affects us specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what the research have learned is that there's a difference between, you know, non-Hispanic whites, African Americans, and Latinos, right? And the mm-hmm. way that this disease affects us. Why? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There is. And so there's a big push right now to really recruit black and brown communities, so Latinos and African American participants to participate in a research study to find out why that is. And
mm-hmm.
and I know there's a lot of historical, let's say, trauma or hurts, right, in this area
mm-hmm.
for African American
mm-hmm.
and Latinos. And so I think really educating on first acknowledging that happened, right, in the past, and then two, explaining why this research study, why we need to participate in these studies, are important for our community, our respective communities, right? Because if we do want to find treatments that help us and our loved ones, we need to participate, right? And what does that mean? Studies, you know. I know I can speak for the Latino community. A lot of them think, I don't want to be a rat. I don't want to be an experiment. I don't want people to experiment on me, right? So there's a lot of misconception, and rightly so. So really
mm-hmm.
educating on what that means, right, and what the type
mm-hmm.
of study it is. So a lot of education and information we have to lead with that. And then two, the people who are delivering this information and education have to speak the language and have to know the culture so that they can be
right.
accepted by the community and hear them.
maybe we'll get into this at some point through our conversation, but I guess I'd be curious to know, how is this diagnosed? If somebody has dementia, what's the process of determining that?
So there's a series of tests that have to occur before coming to that diagnosis, right? So there's a cognitive test that the physician can do, the primary care physician can do in the office, but there's also lab work. There's also, then there's CT scans. So there's a series of tests that have to take place. And you have to do one before you get to the next one, if that makes any sense, right?
It does.
Before they come to that.
And then you go through that process, and then you maybe wait 2 years later or 3 years later, and you say, you know, it's probably time to have a brain scan again or have some kind of cognitive testing again just to see where you are. Because did I understand you incorrectly? Is it not acceptable to think that there is a lack of memory and forgetfulness? Let me use that word. Let me use the word forgetfulness as opposed to lack of memory. Is that part of the natural aging process for anybody?
So I would say forgetting things is common, right? As we get older, we're not as sharp. I'll say that, right?
Uh-huh.
When it starts to become a problem where you need to maybe something is like, for example, you start to forget, let's say, people's names that you've known for a long time, family members, and you're starting to, you're just drawing a blank, and you cannot remember that person's name for the life of you, right? That's one example. The other is a perfect example. I met this gentleman, his name is Jose. And he took the same route. He worked at the factory for like 20 years, okay? He took the bus to and from work every day. And what time? The same time he left, and, you know, the bus, and the same time he came home, the bus. And he would get off at the bus station right in front of a gas station, because his house was like a 3 or 4 houses down. Every day for 20 years. So all of a sudden, Jose gets off the bus, cannot remember which house is his. Okay, he came home from work. He knew he was coming home from work, but he could not remember the house. And so he went inside the gas station because the gas station owner, the employee, knew him.
Sure.
And he said, "Hey, you know, can you help me?" And he said, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, I can't remember which house is mine." And the employee thought he was joking. He's like, "No, I'm not joking. I really don't remember it." So he caught on. He goes, "Oh, this is serious. He really doesn't remember." So he walked him to his house. He goes, "I'll walk you." I said, no problem. I'll walk you. This is your house.
Nice.
"Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And then he tells him, "Don't tell my wife this happened." The perfect example of how the brain, the memory starts to, decline. I don't know what other good word to put in there. But that's how it starts, if that makes sense.
It does. And I'm sure it's frightening. Not only for him not going which way do I go, but when the family is contacted and it's like, okay, here's what you need to understand that's just happened. Is age a factor in this? Is it a factor?
A risk factor, yes. So, you know, studies show that the older you get, the higher at risk you are, there are certain risk factors that come into play. So diet, what you're eating, right? So, you know, a lot of sugar is not good. It's not good for the brain, for the heart. And I think the easiest way that people can remember, this is what's good for your heart is good for your brain. That's how you can reduce the risk factors for Alzheimer's. Another one is activity, walking, you know, dancing, learning music, like learning songs to a lyric. So things that will keep the brain active reduces your risk.
Yeah, you made me think of something. Just a side note, because it just when you said music, I'm in Rotary. I'm in a Rotary Club, and there's a woman not far from our Rotary Club that started an entire program based on her husband. He was basically not speaking, but when he sat down to the piano, he could sing the words that he wasn't able to speak when he wasn't at the piano. And it's just phenomenal. It gives me goosebumps just telling you this. And so she started a nonprofit called Music Mends Minds. I need to tell you about that off the air so you can look that up. But it's Music Mends, M-E-N-D, Music Mends Minds, and how music can bring you back to something that's heartfelt and meaningful. And you made me think about that. That's really interesting. So I'm sorry to sidetrack, but I wanted to ask you this.
Music is just, music therapy is so beneficial in more ways than one, I think, for the human person.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you mentioned the other thing about, I like what you said. You said that what's good for your heart is good for your brain. I think diet plays a part, and like you also said, so does exercise. And probably the third thing that you didn't mention, what probably plays a part in this just for a healthy person, is sleep, that you get decent sleep. And so between your sleep and your diet and your exercise, right?
Yes, and I want to add one more thing, Marcia.
Please.
Socialization, that is so important. The pandemic also highlighted this. So many people have become isolated or are isolated, right? For whatever reason, right? Are afraid to come out or don't have access, just can't come out, lost touch, for whatever reason. But socializing, also is very good for the person, for the individual, for the heart, body, mind, and soul. It's so good to interact with people. We're not made to live alone. I truly believe that in my heart. And be part of community and be part of each other's lives, right? That adds so much value to the person. Absolutely.
And it's interesting because that's what gives my life a lot of purpose by doing this every week with such wonderful guests like yourself. I mean, it's purposeful and I'm grateful for that. Are there some specific genetic or environmental factors that would increase the risk of Alzheimer's among the Latinos? And how can these individuals better understand their risk?
Yes, so there are genetics do play, but I want to say it's a huge role as people think they do. So there are studies out there if you have a specific gene, you're at higher risk to get the disease. I want to say the easiest way that I explain is that even though if you have those genetics, it does not mean you are 100% going to get it, if that makes sense. It's a risk factor. It increases your risk of getting that disease. Because there's family members, let's say, for example, siblings. If you have siblings who have all got the disease, who were diagnosed with the disease, it doesn't mean 100% that you will get it. But the best way that I heard this explained, I was at a conference and this lady explained it. It's like a light switch, right? So we all have these genes, right, certain genes. And it depends on the lifestyle that we are living. What are we putting in our bodies? What are we doing with our brain activity? What are we doing with our physical activity? That will turn on that switch, if that makes any sense. It makes sense
it
to
does.
Me. When I'm like, oh, I get it. I get it. That makes so much sense because it's not 100% guaranteed that you will get it if someone in your family has it or if there's genetics involved. It really does come down to lifestyle, activity, or lack thereof, if that makes any sense.
It does. I remember when Sudoku first came out and then Wordle came out and there's all these games and word things and trying to, just stimulate your brain. I remember when those things all started. And I think those are all, sometimes you're a senior citizen, you might have a little bit more time to do those things than somebody that's putting in a 50-hour work week. But there are things like that that's out there. But perhaps you could describe some of the unique challenges that the community is facing when it comes to the dementia and the support.
Well, I'm going to go back here to
It's the access.
Certain beliefs, right? So there's certain beliefs within the Latino community that kind of become a barrier to that. And for, so one is believing that this disease is as a normal part of aging, right? It's almost 6 out of 10 that's believe that significant loss of cognitive abilities or memory is a natural part of aging rather than a disease. So that's a problem, right? So really educating the community of what is normal and what is not, or in quotes there, what's normal, what's usual. The other thing is a fear. There's a fear of the word Alzheimer's, mentioning the word brings up certain emotions for some people, and some are hesitant to talk about it because the belief is, and I'm just talking about my community and what I've heard personally, is if I talk about it, I might get it. So I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about that, right?
Right, yes.
Yes. And then there's also a lot confused this with mental illness. So another grave misconception in the Latino community is that the belief that Alzheimer's disease is a mental illness, and it is not, right? So really educating on that piece. And I could tell you, from our caregivers, our caregiver workshops, what we hear, what I've heard as a common theme is some of them think it's a common belief among caregivers is that they think that the person with dementia is faking it, right?
Oh, because you're kidding.
Because they think, how can he remember what happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but he can't remember what he did 5 minutes ago? I think he's faking it. And so these are the thoughts, right, that come when they come into our workshop, our class. But by the time they leave, they learn that this is part of the disease. This is what happens, right? They can remember the lyrics to a song that's 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, right?
Right.
But they can't
right.
remember what they had for breakfast. They can't remember your name. They can't remember who you are and what you meant to them in their life. It's very hard for a caregiver to experience that, and then two, to live with it and then care, to care for the individual. And so bringing the educational piece that this is the normal part of the disease. This is how the disease unfortunately is. But they're so grateful after they complete our workshops because they learn the disease, the educational piece of it, and then the stages of the disease, and they identify, oh, this is where I'm at. This is where my loved one is at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, two, they learn how important it is to take care of themselves. Self-care is so important as a caregiver because this is a 24/7 job. If anybody, and if your listeners, if you've ever cared for someone who is sick, it is a 24-hour, 7 days a week labor of love.
It's so interesting. I was thinking about some people in this community. I've lived here a very long time, and I remember this one gentleman saying, in the middle of the night. His wife just escaped, and that was a term he used. She just left the house.
Yeah.
And it's like, where did she go? And that was, like, startling because she didn't know where she was, and now we need to find her. I remember another family where they actually put, like, a big hook and eye on all the doors that were hard for anybody to reach but this tall person. And that way, if they tried to open the door, they weren't going to be able to exit. So I remember knowing that. I guess what would be interesting for me to know, and I don't know what the answer is, so that's why I guess I can ask it, is this a preventable disease?
Well, you can't. I would say there's steps that you can take to reduce the risk. I go back to that. There's ways that we, as individuals, there's things that we can do to reduce our risk to getting this disease, and that is nutrition, that is diet, right? What am I putting in my body? Am I active? Am I physically staying active? Am I walking? Am I working my brain? You know, so mm-hmm. all of these things contribute, right? Am I living alone and just sticking to myself, or am I socializing? Am I interacting with others? All of that comes into play and helps mm-hmm. to reduce the risk of getting this disease.
It reduces it, but it doesn't prevent it.
Correct. And that's the okay. best way I think I could explain
sure.
that.
Would you say that there's just some cultural factors within your community that just impacts people's attitudes toward dementia and seeking care for it?
So I would say all of those things that I mentioned, so it's all of these
uh-huh.
beliefs are connected to lack of education and information
uh-huh.
and contribute to delays in seeking medical help or accessing dementia-related services, and I would say lead to disparities in diagnosis, treatment,
mm-hmm.
and support for individuals with dementia and their families. So it's like a compilation,
yeah.
right,
mm-hmm,
of all of
mm-hmm.
these things that contribute to that, to the lack of access.
I'm sure that's true. It's a daunting subject, but it's an important subject. And
yeah.
because you've kind of done all sides of this, from the caregiving side to the, you know, the education side and all of this, I think this is really significant. Let me ask you another question. Are there certain resources and support networks that are available to the Latino families who might be caring for someone with Alzheimer's? Are you the best nonstop place to go?
Yes, I will say 100% yes. And
okay.
I have an easy way to access this. We have a helpline, and if you don't mind, I'm going to share
okay.
that with you now. It's
please
44-HELP-ALL. That's 1-844-435-7259. And you've also shared our
website.
Web address. That's all. Mm-hmm. Website, well, alzheimersla.org. But that we have information that will help not only the Latino community, but also African American and Mandarin. So we have those are the languages aside from English that we specialize
mm-hmm.
in. We have a
wonderful
really great education and outreach team that raise awareness, inform, and connect to resources. That's our
mm-hmm.
know outreach and education team. And then we have another great group of clinical services. That's our care counselors. And these are all MSW or higher, or Masters in Social Work, or licensed
mm-hmm.
Clinical social workers who speak, you know, Spanish as well. And will really, the best way that I could describe their expertise or their specialty is walking
mm-hmm.
hand in hand with the caregiver, the person who's providing the care for the person
nice.
With dementia, to help them on this journey. Cause it's a
mm-hmm.
tough journey. I'm not going to lie and say that it's going to be easy, because it's not.
But
we can't provide you the help, number one, the support, and the resources that you will need along the way. I think that's the specialty of our care counselors.
I just think that's great. Now, something really big happened. I believe, was it yesterday? Did you have a really big event yesterday?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Tell us about
it. It's our third annual. It's a Making Memories Festival, and it's, like you said, November is a month of to raise awareness on the disease, and then also Caregivers Month. So we had
mm-hmm.
a great event yesterday at LA Historic Park. We had a lineup. Oza Motley was the main headliner. Great, great supporter of the cause and our organization. We love them. And also other groups, local groups that were contributed to the lineup. And then we also had great sponsors to come and table, spread more information, raise awareness, and
mm-hmm.
inform, and again, connect to resources. So everything and anything that we thought would be helpful for the community to learn about the disease, and then,
mm-hmm.
Two, if they're living with someone, you know, currently taking care of someone with the disease, connect them to resources. And it was a great event yesterday. So it always
wonderful.
Happens in November. Next mm-hmm. year, hopefully we can get some more, you know, another great event.
Sponsors. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is a disease, and I mean, I suppose you could say that about any disease, but this is a disease that affects the entire family, whether you're
yeah.
the granddaughter, whether you're the wife, whether you're, you know, whomever you might be in relationship to. You know, this is a question that just occurred to me, and if I'm wondering this, maybe somebody else might be wondering this. Is it more prevalent in men over women or women over men, or is it about the same?
Oh, that's a good – you know, women are more prevalent than men.
Really?
And I don't have this in front of me, but we do have data on that. Yes, we do.
That's interesting because I think about my father was from a very large family, and
uh-huh.
The people that lived to a certain age, I mean, those that lived into their 60s and 70s and older – it was the sisters that had dementia, not any of the brothers. My father died of a rather, you know, he's in his early 70s. My mother was even much younger. And so I don't have that to look at, but I do know that, you know, I do have family members that had that. And they ended up going into, like, nursing homes. Is that a common thing that people will do sometimes?
Yes, for those who I will say this, for those who can't afford
it,
nursing,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do tend. I could say, you know, well, I could speak for the Latino community. That's not something I would say common. I think
uh-huh.
I can say this maybe as a last resort, because in our culture. We take care of our own. That's another, you know, I think
mm-hmm.
a big, it's just, we're just different. We
mm-hmm.
we're prone to take care of our own. We're prone to keep it in the family. We're prone to, some families are very protective of who they let in, right? And
right.
So, and it's not seen as an obligation. Like the word caregiver itself doesn't really translate well in Spanish. Because we don't see it that mm. way. I'm her daughter. I am my dad's daughter, and it's
mm-hmm.
Now it's my turn to take care of him. No question asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the majority of us, I can't speak for a whole population, but I can tell
sure.
you that this is something that's common in our culture, is that we take care of our own, and those who can afford a facility may, you know, lean towards that way. But there's also a guilt, because again, it's like we're used to, well, you know,
right.
how can I put my mother in a home? How can I put my father in a home? These are just the conversations that took place in my household when my dad got sick, right? And my mom has,
right.
my mom is still alive. She's 81 years old. And she told me, I don't want to go. Don't put me in a casa. I don't want to go in a home. You know, and I said, don't worry
mm-hmm.
about that. You will never have to. You are staying with me. Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure, because
yes.
now that we've lived through this, she just wants to, I said,
sure.
don't worry about that. You're fine. And she tells me, you know, she's, and make sure that my hair is always done. Okay, I promise you.
Oh, gosh.
So
I love that.
Don't put me at home and make sure my hair is always done.
Well, you know, that's what a sense of humor. The interesting
yeah.
thing about what you said, though, is that some of these homes are just exorbitant in cost.
Yeah.
I mean, exorbitant in cost, thousands and thousands of dollars a month. And, you know, not everybody, I don't care if you're Latino or not, but not everybody can afford to
yeah.
to take advantage of that. And if you're thinking about, shoot, you know, I've got a directive and, you know, and I've got a trust and I've got all these things in place and I want my children to inherit my good fortune, you know, I would hate to think that they would have to spend all of what I would consider to be their inheritance on keeping me alive, because I don't know the answer to this, and you might, so I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but in California, we'll just use this, our state, if you are really demented where you can't speak, you don't know your name, you cannot communicate, but you are being kept alive on fluids. Is that something that somebody can opt out of and say, look, it, if I can't say your name, if I can't say my name, you need to pull the liquids out of my arm. Is that legal in California?
So the best way I think I could answer that is that these are decisions that you want to make before.
Yes.
While you are alert oriented and have the capacity to make these decisions yourself, right? This is why I think you hit on that we struggle with and is advanced directive. You know, what do you want? Knowing what the person who is no longer able to make those decisions for themselves,
right?
What they want, but more what they don't want. I want to know what do you want? What don't you want? When you get to this point, right? And so that all that has to be in writing. And then once it's in writing, that's honored.
Right. And I can just tell you, it needs to be notarized, and it's not written up by your physician. It's actually written up by an attorney. An attorney has to be the one that actually does that. So for those of you that are listening.
I will share this with you. In California, there's this document. It's called My Five Wishes, and that document does not have to be notarized.
Oh.
It does have to be by two witnesses. I can speak to that document. And so families can Google that. It's readily available on the internet. You know, I think it's called My Five Wishes. And,
okay, good to know.
California, I believe that only needs two signatures, two witnesses to signature, and they can't be like family, if that makes sense.
Okay, that makes total sense. Because some families really do break up over money. In the final few moments that we've had together on this, really just this has been so informative. When you're not working and you just get to how do you balance your professional life and your personal life? What do you enjoy doing?
Well, I love spending time with my doggies and my husband, of course, and my son.
Okay.
Absolutely. Family is important. But my faith, my faith is also very important. That's what keeps me going. You know, I have to refill my cup.
So to speak, sure.
I really do take time when I know I'm getting, overwhelmed and I need a break. I like to go just disconnect from the world and go on retreats. I learned this a couple of years ago. That's really what restores me and my soul. Because when you're working in social services and these type of things, you want to make sure that you don't get burned out, right? And so I learned what worked for me. Yeah, everybody's different, but honestly, I tell my husband, I need a break, babe, and there's a retreat going on at Sacred Heart in Alhambra, and so I'm going to go there for the weekend.
There you go.
And I literally disconnect. No phone, no nothing. And that's how I replenish my soul.
You know how you hear that, there was a slogan, you can't give from an empty cup. In order to continue to give, we do need to give to ourselves as well. I think it's an important reminder to all of us, whether you're your age or you're my age or anybody in between, that we do need to. I take a yoga class online, and you just sometimes need to take a deep breath and just calm your body down. And however you do it, whether it's through your faith, whether it's to reading, whether it's taking the dogs for a walk and just looking up in the sky and seeing these beautiful clouds, whatever you might be seeing that just replenishes you, I think that that's really important, because what you're doing, and Lisa, it really is important what you're doing. I'm trying to think about the different organizations that I'm associated with where I feel like maybe you could speak to this subject. So I'm gonna give that some thought. But, I want to just thank you so much for being a guest on my show, for sharing your story, your personal story, your professional story, because it's meaningful, and I'm just very grateful that you have taken the time to share that with our listeners today.
Oh, well, I just want to thank you, Marcia, for just, first of all, inviting me and giving me this platform to educate and inform. I think you know, I know it's a cliche, this, you know, information is power, but it really truly is. So I just really wanted to thank you for giving me this opportunity to just shed light on Alzheimer's and the Latino community. Thank you.
And you know, a shout out to my neighbor Lisa, because, you know, she's the one that told me about you. So thank you so
much. Yeah.
I mean, Christy. See, I'm looking at your name that says Lisa. My neighbor, Christy. Christy is the one that told me to contact
you.
I love her. Yes,
thank you,
Christy. I do, too. She's a wonder. She only lives two houses away from me. So I'm grateful that Christy connected us. Now I'm going to let you get on with the rest of your afternoon, and I'll be back here next week. Interestingly enough, my guests next week are from the Midnight Mission downtown on Skid Row. That's what I mean.
Nice.
I really like to highlight the people that are really making a difference, as you are. So thank you once again for your time. I wish you the very best, and I will let you get on with your day. So
thank you
everybody, for listening. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye for now, everybody. Bye-bye.